excitement this morning. All right. So in every good book or movie, main character usually has what I like to call a fatal character flaw. So some of my favorite books are Anne of Green Gables. So we have her fiery red-headed temper. Pride and Prejudice, Mr. Collins and Mr. Darcy's kind of vanity. Or Piglet's fear in Winnie the Pooh. The list kind of goes on and on. Character flaws help you ask, really root for that character and hope that they improve by the end of the book or the movie. And if I think about it, you know, if my life was a book, I think my character flaw would be impatience. See, patience has never been at the top of my strengths column, and so often I find myself kind of rushing between things. When I was little, would read super fast in books so I could get to the end of them and figure out what happens next at the end. Maybe I would tackle a little bit too many courses this semester at seminary because I just wanted to get that Lutheran class kind of over with because I heard it's really hard. Or maybe I don't wait the entire hour to let my bread dough rise, even though I should, and I usually end up with really dense slices of bread. Not good. Basically, I'm pretty impatient. So today's gospel lesson has a lesson in patience that some of us are pretty familiar with. So for those of you who have fruit farms nearby, raise your hands. Yeah, I know you're out there. We're going to substitute figs for apples kind of in our mental area today. So we plant a fruit sapling, and we wait years for it to grow fruit, right? If there's a fruit that's not for impatient people, apples or figs or other tree fruits are pretty much it. I would not do well as an apple farmer. And so I was a soil and plant science major once upon a time before I kind of diverted into theology. So when I get the chance to talk about a plant in the Bible, I get really excited. So here's Bible Fig Tree 101. Are you ready? There might be a test later. All right, so the fig tree is the third tree to be mentioned in the Bible in Deuteronomy. Does anyone know what the other two trees are? Knowledge of good and evil. Tree of life. Perfect. So you have the knowledge of good, tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and the tree of life. The fig tree is the third. 2 Kings speaks of everyone sitting under their own vine and fig tree. And Proverbs 27 features fig trees, Jeremiah and Micah, and that's just in the Old Testament. And figs are prominent in so many world religions, right? So you have Christianity, they're prominent in Islam and Hinduism and Judaism and Buddhism, and really they represent fertility, peace, and prosperity. Ancient Olympians earned figs for their athletic prowess on the field or on the track. And Pliny the Elder talked about the fruit's restorative powers for our health. The Prophet Muhammad reportedly identified the fig as one of the one fruit that he would most wish to see one day in paradise. And a little bit of a fun fact, the fig tree can live as long as 100 years and grow up to 50 feet tall if it's not pruned. Although typically they stay between 10 and 30 feet, so pretty tall. And the fig tree in today's lesson is actually known by another name, the parable that is. It's called the Olivet Discourse. It's called that so because it's on the Mount of Olives where this parable takes place. It's found in three different versions of the Gospels. It's found in Matthew 24, in Mark 13, which we read just a few weeks ago, and in Luke 21, which is our gospel lesson for the day. So, in the Mark text, like I referenced a few weeks ago, Jesus predicts natural disasters, fear, and eventual grandeur at the coming of Christ sometime in the future. And Jesus tells us today that that day is kind of like a fig tree. or an apple tree, if you have those, when harvest time approaches. We know that fruit is coming, we just don't know exactly when. So here's a question. How many of you have kids? Raise your hands. Grandkids? Nieces? Nephews? Cool. So we're going to step into those shoes for a minute because I love the kiddos' children's sermons. They always kind of hit the nail right on the head. So we're going to be pretending that we are watching our granddaughter, and I'm going to name our granddaughter Lucy. She has brown hair and green eyes, and she's probably about 2 to 4, an age where they just ask questions about everything. They want to know why. And even though you don't know the answer to some of the questions that she's asking you, you kind of make it up and she believes you and you think that's really cool. So you have an apple tree in your backyard. You just planted it last week, and Lucy comes over for lunch on Saturday afternoon. And you tell Lucy when she is asking about the apple tree, you say, "See that apple tree out there?" She says, "Yes." And she said, "Someday that tiny apple tree will make an apple and we can have it for a snack." Doesn't that sound fun? I really like snacks, in case you can't tell. "Yes," she replies. And then for weeks and for months after that initial visit, she says, "Grandma and Grandpa, is the tree ready for snacks yet?" See, she's bursting at excitement at the thought of something edible growing from something that is growing itself. And you're not really sure what to tell her, so you just say, "Not yet, and maybe next week." And it goes on and on. Visit after visit, she's asking about this apple tree, if it's going to have snacks yet. And you're not exactly sure when the tree will give fruit, and you can have a snack with your granddaughter, except eventually that it will. And just like Lucy, it's so hard for us sometimes to be patient and we don't know what's around the corner. This childlike impatience, though, this anticipation at the thought of a fruit tree growing apples that we can eat, it's that childlike impatience, though, is so different than the impatience in our everyday adult lives, isn't it? And I would imagine that I'm not the only one here today that struggles with impatience. And when I think about it, our lives in general are really based around this notion that the next greatest thing is really around the corner, at least from a 24-year-old perspective. See, when we're 15, at least when I was, I couldn't wait to turn 16 and get my driver's license. When I was 16, I couldn't wait to turn 18 so I could do all those adult things, like going buy a lottery ticket at the drugstore. When I was 18 and I could vote, I wished that I was 21. And we spend our young life just waiting for that moment of seemingly adulthood, only so often to spend those adult working years waiting for the time that we can be retired and spend more time with our family. So I'm going to call that kind of waiting for the next greatest moment in life adult impatience. But Christmas is a time when we all get to embrace that childlike impatience, the anticipation of waiting for something so great that we just can't quite handle it. Those of you who have kids in their lives, I know you know what I'm talking about. It's adorable. So I talked in our Mark text a few weeks ago about this parable and the fact that I really don't like thinking about the events at the end of the world. See, it's scary. And at the same time, though, it's exciting in kind of a weird way. See, I'm so excited to see friends and family that I've lost, to hear about their lives, to get to know them as adults and as people instead of just grandparents and aunts and uncles. And I'm also really excited for a good theological chat with Jesus. And as Christians, we get this kind of sneak peek every year of what it might finally feel like to see Jesus in paradise. And over the next few weeks, we get to peek out that window at that apple tree, and we get to see if it has fruit on it yet. It will in a few weeks. And it's a season of anticipation and of hope for greater things to come in a childlike way. So maybe hold on to that childlike nature of impatience this Advent season as we anxiously await Jesus' arrival, not just on Christmas, but someday in eternity. Amen. Our sermon for today.